and welcome to the Chengdu Living Podcast. My name is Dan, and I'm joined by
Charlie
and Eli.
And so today we don't have any guests with us. We'll actually be talking to Eli, because one of the many things Eli does in Chengdu is he runs a dance studio here in Chengdu with his wife.
Yeah, I mean, runs might be a generous assessment of my actual workload and responsibilities, but I helped to co-found a dance studio in downtown Chengdu with my wife, Coco, and although she does most of the heavy lifting, I try to take as much of the credit as possible.
Yeah, there you go. Well,
what kind of dance studio is it? I've been there before, but for people who don't know, what do you find happen there?
Sure. You know, this is sort of a hard question. This is the kind of question that people invariably ask within the routine of meeting somebody and telling them you have a dance studio. That one of the first questions is, what kind of dance do you do? And the answer is that it's mostly commercial dance and hip-hop dance, but it kind of it verges onto sort of different genres of artsy choreography that don't have terms in common parlance that people are familiar with. Within the dance community, it would be often called maybe LA style or urban dance, which is kind of the moniker that seems to be sticking right now. But it's sort of the focus is on a style of dance that's very emotional and expressive and generally uses hip hop beats or other pop music beats. But
yeah. This is mostly stuff for live performance, or is it for filming music videos, or where is this kind of used?
A lot of it is the kind of dance that you would see maybe in the background at a performance by a pop star in a concert or in a music video. Some of the people who are really popular in this sort of dance scene now do a lot of choreography for music videos in the K-pop world or in, you know, the U.S. video world, although I feel like the degree of influentialness of music videos in the States and doing like really heavily choreographed things may be declining a little bit.
So this is a dance that is influenced by a lot of different countries, like pop styles. It's not a style that was born in China, right?
Yeah, I think that's a good thing to note, that the kind of dance that we do at the studio is really something of a transplant that has come over here from the U.S. and become more popular in recent years. And it probably started out, the spiritual forefather of this style of dance is probably Michael Jackson. And I think if you talk to a lot of dancers, both in China and in the United States, who are at the forefront of avant-garde choreography or just hip, cool, pop choreography, Michael Jackson is sort of the Bruce Lee, the mythical forebearer of it.
So you're not a dancer, right? How did you come to be in this position? Why a dance studio?
Yeah, well, I enjoy dancing. After a few beers, I can get a little two-step going, but I'm definitely not a trained dancer and not someone who got into the dance world because of my abilities in that arena. My former girlfriend, current wife, Coco, was a dance teacher and a dance student. She went to Chuanyin, the Sichuan Pop Music Conservatory, for her undergrad, and later, after she had graduated, taught there as a teacher for a while. She taught at various dance studios around Chengdu, and actually for a time had classes in our home. At a certain point, because her English was pretty good, one of the dance studios with whom she was working asked her to help contact and coordinate with a U.S. choreographer who was coming to Chengdu to teach a master class. And because the proprietor of that studio didn't speak very good English, and my wife's English was nominally better, she was sort of tasked with helping out on that. And because she and I were dating at the time, she came to me to be like, hey, can you help write this email to Kyle Hanagami and, you know, help coordinate the terms for him to come over here. He came over here. While he was here, we spent a good bit of time hanging out with him and taking care of him in Chengdu, showing him around. And then after I saw the workshop that this guy taught, that the dancer taught, and that was being hosted by this local studio, and saw how many Chinese dancers were there, I was really blown away and kind of struck with the potential of what might be there. Because in this case, this dancer was very popular. It was actually like a big get for this studio. And he had rented out a gymnasium at like a nearby university that probably held like 80 to 100 people. And he had 60, 70, 80 kids all crammed in there to watch this one guy teach classes. After that kind of planted the seed for me. And later we started doing the same thing, inviting dancers to come over to teach master classes. That was before we had an actual studio space.
So, but it also seems like Sinostage, the studio, is about a lot more than just dancing. There's kind of a real community sense around it. I went there yesterday for the first time in a few weeks, and I noticed that there was so much activity at the studio. There's two levels. There's a couple different rooms. There's big spaces and small spaces. Each of them had different things happening simultaneously at like 9 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot going on there. Describe some of the other things that happened at Sinostage.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right about the community side of it. Part of it is the way that the physical space is designed contributes to having that simultaneous multi-purpose use. And that allows us for, you know, to accommodate greater number of people and their various needs at the same time. We were very lucky to have the interior design for our studio done by Mojo Designs. That's an architectural interior design studio run by a good friend of us, or one of our good friends works there. And they, as you guys know, the aesthetic of the studio is very sort of modern, minimalist, a little bit industrial, and a lot of glass and concrete feel to it. So it has a cool vibe to it, and that makes the casual student more inclined to maybe hang out there more, spend a little bit more time, and try to build an identity through that space. And for us, the key to building loyal customers and cultivating a group of young people who are interested in being part of the community is not just teaching this physical exercise of dance, but also, you know, teaching them the ancillary benefits that come with being a part of that community, expressing yourself, feeling a sense of kinship and association, feeling a safe place or a refuge or something like that, or getting to feel a little bit cooler, like you're part of something. So we definitely try to do that as much as we can. Sorry, that was a really long-winded answer.
No, that's a great story about what the real purpose of the place is, because it's not just about, you know, teaching dancing or just doing dancing. I get the sense that it's about much more than that. And I have that feeling with a lot of other businesses here. When we talked with Johnny Five in the Donut podcast, I felt that same way exactly. So it's cool to hear that.
Yeah, I mean, that's not something that I really had in mind in particular when I wanted to start being involved in this, because I was thinking about it more like, this can be an extension of my wife's career. This is a way that I can help support her. And this is a way that maybe I can help to start a business and create some kind of enterprise that can passively generate income. And I probably thought about it more mechanistically, like this is the product of dance and how do we facilitate the delivery of that to the customers, which are these young kids, and how do we appeal to them? I probably did not fully grasp the intangibles of building that community. And that's gradually come into focus more, just hanging out with those people and being steeped in that, because they're really like passionate and expressive. And there's a whole, you know, idealism that floats around the dancing sphere that I probably would have felt a little bit like soft and ashamed of espousing if I wasn't like hanging out there all the time. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Can you describe what the growth of it was like? I'm curious. So when you start Sinostage, it was in a different location. It was in a smaller place. You had obviously a smaller following. The community was much smaller. What was it like growing and building up to the point that you're at now? Because as I understand it, you've got a lot of momentum and a lot of growth over the last year or so.
Yeah, I mean, we're pretty much the best in the world, I would say, hands down. No.
with the people you're inviting, it's the best in Chengdu, right?
Well, you know, we probably do have the corner locked down for international dancing, and we've been lucky to have been supported by and gotten to build relationships with some of the top level urban dance studios in the United States, including Movement Lifestyle and the Kinjas, lots of other really cool dance crews in the U.S. who have come out here and shown us love and respect by visiting our establishment and teaching master classes there, and also worked with us to make videos or do merchandise stuff or do tours with us in China. But it took a long time to get to that place, and we started out going off on a tangent.
One major way that you guys have found the success that you're currently enjoying is through your use of social media, right?
Yes, that's absolutely true. I mean, to answer your previous question, the way that we got to where we are is we started out first by just inviting teachers directly before we had a facility. So we were inviting them to come over, and then we would rent out a gymnasium, or we would go to somebody else's studio and we would hold the master classes there. And then about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, we actually got our own space in the Poly Center, which as residents of Chengdu know is like the nuclear reactor of the social universe in Chengdu at this moment. And so part of it, our success was just being in the right place at the right time. We had a very small dance studio. It was extremely cramped and narrow. And we stayed there for about a year. And during that time, built up a following of students, built up a better roster of dancers, built up our relationships with international dancers and studios, and built up our following on social media. And then eventually when we got the opportunity to move into a larger space, also in Poly Center, which really allowed us to break through. And it was the moving into the second larger studio, which happened about a year ago, that was the transitional point.
Shoulda. Think about it now that I woulda, coulda. Do you really wanna know the truth? Truth wasn't really your strong suit, but I won't lay it on nothing. Everybody gonna wanna do. Couldn't really clean up the
room. So you sort of have a connection with hip hop, being a freestyler back in Georgia, right?
That's true. Yeah,
into hip hop and rap.
I'm an unrepentant rapper.
Yeah, so you have you already have this connection to hip hop, and hip hop is actually one of the big words that is often used to describe like the type of dancer, one of the styles that goes on at the studio. The hip hop that you experienced growing up, compared to what a lot of these young people are like. Learning is hip hop in the studio. Where is the overlap, and where does it diverge?
You are correct. Hip hop was an important part of my identity growing up, and it's something that I still consider to be an important part of my identity. Being associated with the studio has given me a way to sort of maintain that connection, even though I've kind of been subsumed by the corporate world by now in a lot of ways because I have a 9-to-5 job, When I experience hip-hop through the conduit of the studio and through the hip-hop scene and the hip-hop experience of the dancers there, it is somewhat different from the style of hip-hop and the vibe of hip-hop that I grew up with and maybe that I practice to the degree that I am a practitioner. I think that it is very current with what is sort of in vogue in the United States with hip hop right now, which is that, you know, it's trending a little bit faster in terms of BPMs. It's trending a little bit more busier in terms of the backbeat and the traps and the snare. And it's trending a little bit more sing-songy with the lyrical delivery and cadence. So there's a lot of people who are sort of blurring that line between traditional rap delivery and traditional singing delivery and harmonizing in there.
So that's from a musical perspective, but in terms of like the ideals of hip-hop that you see being spread throughout the studio compared to like what you grew up on.
Okay, so to some degree, I feel some amount of alienation with the way that hip-hop is now both there and in the United States, but I also think part of it is just me getting older and the kids being into new music now. In terms of the ideals that underpin those, I think that there, when you're in the commercial sphere, there's always a dilution of the, you know, core hip hop principles, like where hip hop started out in the Bronx and the emceeing, DJing, breakdancing, and graffiti artists. Sure, the kids are not like steeped in those principles to the same way that people were in the golden era of hip hop in the 90s. But I think that that's just sort of an inevitable byproduct of music over the years. I can't begrudge them that. I think that the fact that hip hop can still be influential and that it's influential sort of indirectly through the music that's popular now and through the dance that's popular now is good enough and is really great. I mean, to give you one example of that, when we brought Sean Evaristo, who's one of the most popular dancers in the world, founder of Movement Lifestyle Studio in LA, choreographer for the K-pop mega group Big Bang. He choreographed their big hit Wedding Dress music video. He was a travel choreographer for Justin Bieber. When he came out here, and we were lucky, this was earlier this year in February of 2015, we had this event with the U.S. Consulate at Raffle City in downtown Chengdu, where he did sort of a TED Talk style presentation to all of these young Chinese dancers and got to go through a slideshow and talk about his journey and experience as a dancer. one of the questions for him during the Q&A session from a Chinese dancer afterwards was, you know, what would you recommend to a Chinese dancer who's starting out, who really wants to tap in to the essence of how to get to where you are? And he said, like, unequivocally, go back to the fundamentals of hip-hop. Listen to classic hip-hop. And in sort of subsequent conversations, he could sort of explain and deconstruct the way that moves which are part of the popular repertoire and vocabulary of choreography that we see in vogue now have their roots in old-school hip-hop dance moves that have just kind of got smoothened out and more accentuated and then transformed into that style.
So he really emphasized going back to the roots of hip-hop.
Going back to the roots of hip-hop. It's still alive and well.
Right.
Okay.
So I'd just like to jump in and say that we have now been joined by occasional Chengdu Living podcast member, Zach.
What's up, everyone? I'm Zach. That's it. That's the important thing you need to know. My name is Zach. I hung out at Sinostage a lot when I first got here. So I was invited on, I think, because of this experience. So I've seen Sinostage transition from the kind of hallway-sized studio to this major force in the nuclear reactor of Poly Center. Mm-hmm. And so I've kind of been witness to it all, and I've seen Coco change, I've seen Eli change through the process, and I will now share with you my opinions about that.
We've become worse and worse people.
yeah, clearly worse. There's been a clear slide, and now I'm out. Those are my two cents.
What was the growth like? Describe that. What did you see?
A big change.
I mean, when it started, your wife already had kind of a following, right? So did you already have some movement immediately after you got into the small space?
To be honest, it was really hard to find teachers that were really appealing to students. And our turnover rate for teachers in the early days was quite high. And just the other day, I was actually looking at our website, www.sinostage.com, and I was looking at the instructors section and the thumbnail pictures of the instructors there, and I realized, wow, these are wildly out of date. 12 out of the 15 dancers who are pictured there are no longer affiliated with us. And that's just because dancers are sort of unstable people and young people by definition. And so at that part of their life, you know, people are doing lots of different things. You're trying to discover what it is you want to study, what it is you want to do for your job, and maybe somebody who's really into dance is not going to be into dance 18 months later. It's hard to find filter out the people who are most competent and most ambitious and most appealing to the students, because another thing that we found with the teachers is that initially, we may have gone after teachers who were the best dancers under the presumption that the best dancers would make the best teachers, but time hasn't really proved that to be true.
And a lot of these dancers are club performers initially, right? So if they're not teachers at Sinostage, and if they're not teachers at somewhere that's your competition, and they're not touring with one of the wonderful Chinese or foreign pop artists, like they're from CC Club or from...
In clubs is one of the main ways for a dancer like that to earn money in Chengdu.
Absolutely. I mean, I would say when we started out, some of our teachers were definitely caught in that liminal space of trying to decide whether or not they wanted to be dance teachers or whether they wanted to be club performers, because it's a little bit of a tension to try to do that, because working in clubs just has a different life cycle. And it pays more to work in the club, but it's a little bit harder on your body, it's a little bit harder on your self-esteem, and it doesn't offer the same kind of prospects for growth. On the flip side, dancing feels more healthy, feels more positive, doesn't pay as well, but maybe could make you into something later on. I should say now all of the teachers who teach at our studio are just teachers. None of them work in clubs. Although there are a fair number of people who are our students at the studio who also work in clubs or do some other kind of performance work for a living. And this is where they come to, you know, touch up and become better and learn new choreography.
So all the teachers there can make a livable wage.
Yeah. And as we've grown, the amount that we've been able to pay our teachers has gone up. It took a long time to build up a steady crowd, a steady draw of students. And as we've been around for a longer time and we've built up a following on social media and our teachers have more firmly established their personalities and their drawing power, the average number of students per class has gone up. And basically the way that we pay our teachers is they get a fixed monthly salary and then they get a variable wage that's dependent upon the number of students who attend their class. So it's made it possible to pay them more, which has made them more motivated. And I think it's kind of incentivized them to hone the craft of teaching a little more, in differentiation from just dancing. And some of them are really, really great teachers, and it's not due to their greatness as dancers that they're great teachers.
Have you ever taken any of the classes?
Since we've moved into our new space, I haven't. I have problems with my knees, so there's a little bit of physical limitations. Also, I'm clumsy and embarrassed. Yeah, I go ahead. I see you making side remarks, Zach. I have been in a dance class. I've subjected myself to that humbling. I can confirm I'm not very good at it.
I think you're great. I've seen you move out there, and your knee. I was actually saying Charlie was being insensitive for not taking a look at the bandages on your knees. Because I know that if they weren't there, you'd be out there busting a move.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
I've taken one of the classes. Sorry.
What are the classes like? Describe what the classes are like. I'm curious. I've never seen one. But what happens in a normal class at Sign of Stage?
They have choreography in mind. And there are move drills. What drills where they will practice one move over and over, try to get the right technique down. But the one class that I did, we learned choreography. So, it was about 30 seconds of a song that we learned over an hour, move after move, and then repeating it from the beginning to the point where we had finished. And at the end of it, felt a little bit better, but still tough.
Yeah, I mean, it's very difficult. And my wife has been insistent that I try it on a few occasions. There was one time when I was doing a performance for a spring festival, a Chunwanhui kind of event for the company that I was working for, and there were several women who worked in the company who had arranged to do a little choreography piece that was choreographed by some of the teachers at the studio, and then I was going to do a little hip-hop performance in between. So it was like they came out on stage first, they performed, then I went and did a couple verses, and then there was like a dance finale that we did together. And so for that, I did subject myself to it.
It's mostly, what's the breakdown of men versus women in the classes?
Oh, I think it's heavily slanted towards women, probably 75%, I would guess. Could be even higher.
I will also say, if we're trying to paint a picture of the studio, I don't know if you guys went over this before I came, but the new studio, especially compared to the old one, conveys legitimacy on the place that I really do think has made a huge impact, particularly with the aesthetics on social media. It's very much like if you build it, they will come, and you've built an international, gorgeous, two-story international dance studio. I said international twice. It's really international.
Super international.
And, but it feels that way. So you're in a class there, you're watching a class there, and the caliber of the teachers is there, the caliber of some of the students is there, and even bumbling guys like Eli in the back aren't going to throw that feel off.
Yeah, they're like, what is that guy doing here?
International.
They're like, that pasty white guy is really creeping me out.
I've seen so many of your videos. You guys film a lot of videos in Sign of Stage, right? Do you have any kind of procedure, like once every week you release a new video or something like this?
Yeah, I think one of the greatest growth factors that we've had, one of the greatest things contributing to the growth, is the consistency with which they've been putting out video content. There's not a definite schedule, but there is a routine, which is at least once a week, sometimes more, although it sort of ebbs and flows depending upon the activity that's happening in the studio. What I can say about that is that, that has been incredibly instrumental in helping to consistently bring in new customers and get the word out and allow us to grow without having to spend a lot of money on advertising, because you've had natural, organic, word of mouth, social media buzz. Number two, that has been made possible by virtue of doing all of the video production in-house and doing it on a DIY basis, where when we first started doing video stuff for the studio, in the old studio, the first couple videos that we made, we actually went out and hired a video editor, and we paid them 250 kwai, 500 kwai, 1,000 kwai, something like that, to make us a video. And they did an okay job, but the problem is that there's a lot of work that where you have to sort of explain the aesthetic approach that you're trying to take to this to communicate with an outside editor, and they don't have the motivation to turn it around really quick or to do the best quality work that they would have if they were part of the organization for which this piece of content is going to work.
Which video of yours is most popular or do you like best?
I think the one that's most popular and probably the one that we like best is the Shaolin video. And that was one that we filmed last fall when the Kinjas, which is a really popular and influential dance troupe in LA, came out to Chengdu, did a tour all over China, actually, that we helped to arrange and taught a series of master classes in Chengdu. And so that is a Mike Song, Pat Cruz, Anthony Lee, and for this video also Bam Martin, although he's technically part of a different dance crew. And we took them to, we had taught a master class in Henan, in Zhengzhou, and then we took them to the Shaolin Temple, which is also in Henan, and we filmed a dance video of them performing like some choreography that they had done there in China. We filmed them performing that inside of the Shaolin Temple, and then you know, had it assembled and edited in a really cool way.
Yeah, it's a pretty dope video. It's a lot of fun.
We'll include that here.
When you say social media, because social media in China looks a lot different than what we might be used to when you roll out a social media campaign. And some of what you guys do is actually like totally new. So could you explain what a social media campaign looks like for Sinostage?
That's a great point. I think the mode of social media here is a little bit different than what, you know, this ain't your mom and your dad's social media. In the sense it's not, because, you know, like my mom and dad are on Facebook, you know, they're not on Snapchat. And this is more mobile social media. Obviously, there's like a trend of growing social media use on the mobile platform. That's definitely true of media use in China, social media use. And the platform that's really been taking over in that respect is, WeChat, obviously, which is like the, you know, 1,000-pound gorilla in the room that we all love and are a slave to because it provides everything that we need and we rely on for social communication. And we're pretty big on WeChat. But the other one is Meipai. And Meipai is like a Chinese version of Vine, if you're familiar with Vine. Vine is sort of a video microblogging social media app in the U.S. where you can take 7-second clips and people can view them on a loop and you can record them live and then send them out onto your timeline. And so it's the same thing with Meipai. You can record, I think it's like 8 or 15-second or 60-second clips.
Yeah, I've seen some 60-second from you guys. I don't know if that's because you guys are so popular or what.
They give us extra seconds, dog.
That's a thing, man, that's a thing on Instagram, I think. I don't know if that's true or not.
That makes sense. They need to make money.
They have.
Yeah, because you guys are getting like, layouts of numbers.
Right. We have 210,000 followers on Meipai at the moment, and it's grown, I don't know, 5-10 in the past week. It's been growing at a pretty consistent clip, and the growth rate has kind of accelerated after we pass a certain threshold, because then you just start to get organic accretion of people who are like, oh, there's. It's a lot of followers for that thing. It's probably good.
Organic accretion.
Yeah.
How long has this been accretion been going? Like, how long has Meipai even been doing its thing?
You know, they actually launched less than a year ago, maybe just under a year ago, and we were early adopters on that platform. So our success there has partially been due to the fact that we were just one of the first content providers in that sphere, and so we kind of cornered the market for dance content. And also because we were on there early and we were putting out media content consistently, Meipai did kind of take a shine to us. So they give us, although the 60 seconds is something that's available for everybody, that's not just for us. They started out with 15 and then they offered a 60-second platform.
Everyone is made equal, but some people are made more equal
than others.
Is that right?
Right. But they have you know, given us like favorable like producer status. They send us some swag, essentially, and sometimes they will feature us on their hot page, or they will actually, in some cases, they even ran a banner on the top of, because they have content category types. So it's like cat videos, like hilarious home videos, like fail videos, and then there's like a dance video one. And within that, for a period, they even ran a banner on the top of that section that was for Wubang, the Sinostage, which we did not pay for.
Is there anybody else in like competing with you in the Maypie market?
To be honest, I'm sure that there is, but I'm just not aware of them because I'm not like...
Off your radar.
Yeah. I don't even see those fools. I see past them. No, that's not because like we have grown beyond them. It's because I don't actually do most of the hard work in that regard. Mm-hmm. I'm not like in the trenches. That is our in-house videographer who has just been really, really diligent about that, about whenever we have a masterclass... turning around a video for Maypie and then later on Youku within a few days, and then we'll put out the Maypie and then we'll also put a link to the Youku on our WeChat stream, and that'll
help. Do you use Twitter as well?
We have a Twitter, but we don't use it very consistently. We have a Twitter, Instagram, and American social media presence, but we haven't really got it flying as high as we'd like to.
There's a new really hot social media app called Periscope. Have you heard of it?
I have heard of it. Is that similar to Meerkat?
That, how long until that becomes in China?
That sounds like a joke, but those are two actual competitors, yeah. Which is...
It's live broadcasting for anybody who doesn't know. You can use your iPhone to record anything live, and followers can watch it live.
Right. And, I mean, that's similar to the what's called? The site function on WeChat that they have now as well, right?
Site is much more like Vine.
Yeah, it's not as expensive.
It's not live. It's not live.
Oh, yeah, it's not. Oh, I see. Periscope is live.
WeChat are both live. Yeah, and right. I think it's connected to your Twitter account. So, like, if you follow somebody on Twitter already, you follow them on Periscope automatically.
Periscope is made by Twitter.
I see.
But actually, Periscope works here without a VPN.
Huh. I was not aware. I've not tried that platform. I should say that Maypie is actually also co-sponsoring us with an event that we're holding next weekend. Oh, wow. Here in Chengdu.
This is a very big event, right?
Right. So we're holding a nationwide dance competition called Arena, which is a team competition. So 20 teams are coming from around China to compete. We're also bringing 8 master teachers from the United States who are going to act as judges, and will also teach masterclass workshops before and after the competition. But the competition is on May 24th, and it's at the CYNN Hotel Auditorium on Kohua Beilu from 7:30 to 9:30. And it's going to be really, really exciting. We're being co-sponsored by the U.S. Consulate as well, and they're going to come and give some remarks at the event. And Maypie, the extent of their co-sponsorship or cooperation is that I think they're going to give us some featured status with the videos that we produce from that event, and just push it a little bit more on their platform, which hopefully will, you know, get us more views.
You're probably going to have some amazing footage.
Yeah, I was going to ask about that. You guys are going to have a lot of cameras on hand, yeah.
Yeah, I think that the quality of dance that's going to come out of this competition is going to be higher than I expect, because I don't watch enough dance videos, so I don't know the level of like Chinese studios around China. But it's one of those things where every time I see new choreography coming out of China, the amount of growth since the last time I saw it kind of astounds me, because the dance culture in China is just growing so fast that people are getting better and better and better.
Is China competitive with other major developed countries in international dance competitions?
It's the kind of thing where traditionally they haven't been, you know, over the past 10, 20, 30, 40 years. But in recent years, they've started to get more so. And the speed at which they're narrowing the gap now is kind of alarming. So I would say they're still not, but there is a time in the very near future where I think they will be. And even now, if you look at somebody like one of our star teachers, whose name is Apple, when the master teachers come to Chengdu and they teach their master classes, she is like every bit as expressive. And with it, maybe she's behind them in choreography, but in her like dance ability, she's right up at their level and could go to like LA and hang with any of the top level dancers there, I believe.
Wow, it's amazing. How much were you guys a part of her growth?
A ton. And she was a huge part of our growth. I mean, it was absolutely symbiotic, because she was one of the first teachers who really started to like get a galvanized, loyal following who would come out for her time after time. And she was really big in the Maypie scene as well. She has her own Maypie account that has more than 100,000 followers. And it's a situation where, you know, she will be filming Maypie videos with her students at the conclusion of class. And this actually gets back to sort of the notion of community that we were talking about, because one of the things that you as a student might be getting out of this class outside of just physical exercise and the feeling of being cool is the sense of community from getting your video taken, dancing with a good teacher, or showing that you can do this really cool thing, and sharing and discussing and comparing yourself to other people out there. So, yeah, the Maypie is a big part of it.
So So what is the prize for the winner of this arena competition? There are 20 teams coming to compete. They're all from inside China. Is that right?
So, yeah, we have teams from all over China. There's 7 or 8 teams that are from Beijing. There's a couple from Shanghai. There's 2 from Chengdu. There's 2 from Changsha. There's 1 from Hong Kong. There's 1 from Chongqing. There's 1 from Zhengzhou. There's 1 from Wuhan. There's 1 from Dalian. There's 1 from Guangzhou.
Holy crap.
Okay.
There's 1 from Xi'an. There's 1 from Kunming. There's 1 from Yibin. So it spans the spectrum.
Yibin on the map.
Yibin coming up, yeah. So yeah, I think that the quality of dance is going to be really good.
What's the winner?
Oh, thank you. So I'm glad that you brought that up, because that was one of the questions that we were really grappling with when we were starting to plan the event, which is how can we give a prize that's going to make people really motivated to come out and participate. And originally we announced the competition before we announced what the prize was, and the registration rate was a little bit slow. It was a little bit thin. There were great teams out there that we knew were not registering. And I have to give full credit to my wife here. She actually came to me with the idea, whereas we had been talking about giving something like a 50,000 kwai prize, which seems like a lot, but you have to understand these teams are actually quite big. Most of them are 10, 15, 20 kids in the team. So that money's all going to be split. And we were talking about giving a monetary prize, and she made the suggestion that we should make the prize airplane tickets, round-trip tickets from Chengdu to the United States for every member of the winning team, to give the sense of accomplishment and the symbolic significance of something greater than just winning a domestic dance competition, but breaking through and earning the opportunity to take your craft abroad internationally, which kind of strengthens the ethos that we're trying to represent with Sinostage and being that gateway to international dance culture. Because we are being co-sponsored by the U.S. Consulate for this event, for which I have to say my deepest, deepest thanks to Andrew Oh, Natalie Wilkins, and all of the people in the Public Affairs Department of the U.S. Consulate, we hope and believe that the members of the winning team of this competition will be able to get a chance to go to the U.S. and study dance and share their craft and see a little bit of the world. One of the big challenges for a lot of dancers in China, and one of the reasons why we had a strategic advantage in the market by bringing international teachers here, is the fact that dancers from China can't get visas to go to the United States.
Right. So, my next question was going to be, is the U.S. consulate being involved as a co-sponsor mean that these people can get to the States easier?
It does not necessarily, but hopefully because the U.S. consulate is it's divided into sections, and there's not overlap directly from the public affairs department to the consular department. So it's not like they have any authority to grant visa status, but they will recognize the achievement of these dancers, and hopefully that, you know, supporting document and having participated in that event will strengthen their case when they do go to apply for a visa. And, you know, in defense of the U.S. consulate, it's gotten easier and easier to get visas to go to the United States in recent years. They've issued 10-year visas. They've made it easier for Chinese tourists who want to go there. But one of the demographics for whom passing the visa is the most difficult are young, you know, unemployed or itinerant adolescents, teenagers, young adults, because they don't have a steady income, they don't have a spouse, and they don't have property, which are some of the markers of stability that the U.S. consulate gives credit to when they're considering a visa application. So, you know, that created kind of a bottleneck in terms of access to great dance in China that was an opportunity we were trying to take advantage of. I mean, another thing contributing to that factor is the Great Firewall, because a lot of dancers in China couldn't get onto YouTube to see all of the great dance videos that were out there, so they would have to come to an outlet like Sinostage to get exposure to it. But we're happy that those barriers are sort of gradually getting lowered, and we hope by, you know, doing this competition, participating in getting the validation and credibility from the U.S. consulate, we can contribute to like the overall recognition and added legitimacy towards the dance community in China, because I think it's a really great activity. It's healthy, it's wholesome, it's creative, it's expressive, and it can actually be profound and helpful too.
I'm surprised that there are so many people in this dance community here in China. From like a layman's perspective, one of the things you hear about Chinese parenting is that they don't give too many too much free time for personal pursuit or things of this nature that are not academic or will be helpful for them getting into college or something like that. So do you see from SinoStage's success a reflection on a change in parenting or something like that?
I think that dance is in the sweet spot because it's an extracurricular activity that parents can support because it's healthy and it contributes to academic development and it's good exercise and it's not really inherently rebellious or seditious. But at the same time, it's something that's cool enough that students enjoy doing it, that they wouldn't be ashamed to do with their friends, where they can meet people. Maybe this style of dance is not something that was traditionally within the approved category of Chinese parents, like acceptable activities for their kids or activities that they would be willing to shell out money because, you know, dance classes aren't cheap to support. But I think it might be moving in that direction. And I do believe that there's a growth possibility there for us and for all the people in the dance sector, so to speak, because as we all know, the Chinese middle class is growing and that means they have more disposable income to spend in certain areas like recreation and like childcare and activities for children. And I think dance is one that can benefit from that. I will say I often see cool, stylishly dressed tweens or middle teenagers or 20-ish kids who are showing up at the studio with their parents who are looking kind of skeptical and stern and are watching them perform through like the glass dividers to see what their kids are up to. And I don't know if that's a good thing or a bad thing, but it's definitely a reflection of the market. Yeah,
What is the average age of your students? Are they children? Are they adults?
It really runs the spectrum in the sense that a lot of our dancers are people who are adults with full-time jobs. And so it runs as high as 30, 40, 50 in terms of grown-ups who are coming in there and taking classes after work. That being said, I would say probably 60% of the students are under 25. And probably 70% of the students are under 30.
Something I'm surprised by is I will sometimes see like 16, 17-year-olds. And as wonder, there's a little bit more bump and grind than I would expect Chinese parents being cool with. I mean, the nature of the dance, and especially once kids start understanding some of the lyrics of the songs,
right,
it's definitely a little bit more eroticized than piano lessons after high school classes.
You're absolutely right, and especially considering the nature of the content and the song lyrics, it is borderline salacious.
Not really borderline.
Do you like the way I flick my tongue or no? Oh no. You can ride my face until you're dripping cum. Can you lick the tip then throw the dick or no? Can you do it, baby? Can you let me stretch that pussy out or no?
I would say that it's on the border because you're not actually interacting with another person. You're just reenacting the sentiments that are expressed somewhere else. So it's easy for you to justify and say that you're not doing anything bad, you're just participating in that kind of thing. But I actually think it's the being on the border that it allows it to have appeal to young kids who want to be cool and edgy, just as much as it is being on the border that poses a potential risk to parents who might be, you know, casting a very heavily supervised eye on their child.
I think this also floats under the category of how sometimes people don't understand that a fashion trend usually suggestive movement. So, you know, like some people will dress a certain way in China and they don't understand that that might be suggestive back in the States, but they'll just dress that way because they see other people doing it. I think a lot of people see these movements, hip thrusts, and I'll quote some of the... I've heard some of the most lewd English in China in SinoStage, but like you said...
Very recently.
Just on Friday, actually. I think you're right, and I think that when you're talking about hip-hop culture in China generally, there's a degree to which it's decontextualized, which strips it of some of its inherent meanings, both for good and bad. So that speaks to the point that Dan was asking about earlier in terms of how do you feel about, you know, your beloved hip-hop and the bastardized version of it that is practiced here in China and passed off as real hip-hop.
Put it a little softer
though. Yeah.
How do you feel watching your baby die?
Yeah. As well as, you know, how is it possible that these lewd, lascivious, vulgar, explicitly sexualized lyrics that are part of these songs can be recast into something that's wholesome and healthy and positive for the parents of children that are operating in a relatively traditional value context. And the answer is, you know, it's through the alchemy of globalization.
Well, there you have it.
Yeah, just chalk it all up to the fucking alchemy of globalization after all that shit you just said.
I like alchemy because there's no science behind it that will prove that. And yeah, okay. All right. I'm with you. Alchemy.
Just throw the mic down then.
So, arena dance competition. May 24th, we should also mention now that there is going to be an arena block party on Saturday, May 23rd at the IFS Antiquities Plaza right by Taiku Lee. We're really lucky to be blessed by DJ Just Charlie, who's going to be holding down the ones and twos for the party. It's from 3 to 5 in the afternoon, and it's going to feature dance battles and dance ciphers with some of the teams that are participating in the competition on Sunday. It's open to the public, and it's free, so please come by and enjoy it. And even if it rains, there's an indoor space where it'll be taking place.
How do people get tickets for the arena battle, or how does that work?
Good question. If you're interested in tickets for the arena battle, you can follow us on WeChat, where there's a link to our Alipay site. You can go to the Alipay, that's Zhifu Bao site, through our QR code. And through there, you can pay for a ticket, which I think costs 100 kwai. And then you can pick up that ticket at Sino Stage this week, or you can pick it up at the event location on the day of the event. But I want to say for all the Chengdu Living Podcast listeners out there, we're doing a special ticket giveaway where we're going to be giving away 10 free tickets and 5 free VIP tickets. So if you hear this podcast and you're interested, leave a message in the comments with the word discretion included in it, and you can be eligible for a free ticket.
And do they have to spell it right? Do they have to get discretion right? Is that part of the mix?
That's part of the scavenger hunt of this thing. I don't know if that's the best giveaway mechanism, but
I think it works.
That's a pretty good mechanism. Interesting word mechanism to choose to trigger it, but
it had to be an interesting, slightly obscure word that wouldn't usually show up in the comments. But we should also thank you for listening to the end of the podcast. You're getting all the way to the end.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
You made it, folks.
Yeah. All right, cool. So discretion in the comments if you want free arena tickets.
Yeah, and in the show notes, we'll also include links to the Sino Stage website as well as our Youku page where you can see some of our dance videos. There's more than 50 up there with more than 8 million views. We'll also put a link to our Meipai page where we have over 150 videos of our local Chinese dancers as well as master teachers who are dancing in our studio.
And there's going to be a special one of the Shaolin Monk video because that one is exceptionally cool.
Yeah.
Before we wrap this up, actually, I have two more questions. One question is, how do you see the future of Sino Stage? So we've talked about all the growth up until this point. Where does it go from here?
Really great question. part of it is merchandising and social media. So we're trying to build relationships with these crews and these studios, and we want to help bring them into the China social media sphere. So we have built relationships with a couple of them where we're going to start helping to manage their social media accounts here and putting out their content onto popular Chinese social media platforms, building up their following, and also helping them distribute merchandise in China. Because a lot of the popular dance crews or studios in the U.S. have their own branded merchandise, so we're going to have it locally manufactured and sold here in China. Aside from that, I think the real direction that we're going to end up going in terms of what my wife and I would like to do is content production and maybe verging and transitioning more into what would be considered more traditional forms of content production like TV or web videos. As you know, a lot of TV is going towards the internet and a lot of internet is going towards TV and the boundary between it is getting kind of blurred. So I could see us doing kind of web series kind of content. We're trying to parlay the relationship with Meipai into some ongoing web series, which we can use to promote our brand. So that's one direction. And I also think it's possible in the near future that we might go the route of franchising the studio and opening up other locations either around Chengdu or in other cities in China. To try to just build on that brand and spread the gospel of self-expression and physical activity in China.
Big things on the horizon.
Awesome. That sounds excellent. My last question is, what is your favorite music that you hear inside the studio?
You know, one of the good things that Sinosage does is it keeps me up to date with the stuff that's really popular in mainstream commercial music in America, some of which I dislike and some of which I'm occasionally really struck by liking a lot. And it happens all the time. I would say the most recent time when I've heard a song that I didn't know before but really enjoyed it and sought it out afterwards was that new Major Lazer song that came out recently that they're playing everywhere. How does it go?
Does it have the female vocalist?
Yes.
From,
Dirty Projectors. Amber? I'm not sure if she's the one, but I will give you a copy of that song.
All right. Well, thank you very much for listening.
Thank you. Everybody check out the Sinostage website and social media.
Yep. WeChat, MAPI, Arena 2015.
Cool.
Love me.
See you there.